Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksufas Yud Beis. We are in Yud Aleph Amud Beis. We're at the bottom of the Amud. Obviously, discussion over here in the first parak is revolving around the Ksuva. A woman's entitled to a Ksuva when she gets married. Not only entitled, instituted. An institution of a Ksuva for a woman is to protect her. The husband is going to be thinking more than twice before divorcing her, knowing that there's going to be a serious financial consequence in terms of having to divorce her. And so in order to keep him a little bit more honest and have him literally invested in this marriage, so therefore he's going to write a ksuva. Ksuva is a prenuptial agreement. Okay, probably in the beginning of the Masechta, that's probably the right terminology that I didn't use in describing it, but that's what it is. It's a prenuptial agreement. I know nowadays it's you're going to hear about the prenup, and it's important, and I'm not the person to speak about it. Not a practicing rabbi, but the nevertheless, the original prenup, of course, is a ksuva. And so before getting into the marriage, so the financial obligations, but the lump sum payment that he's going to pay her in the event of death or divorce, so that obviously now is going to put the man in check. So this is a ksuva that we have been discussing. Our primary discussion over here in the first perek is, well, how much? Meaning, what's going to be the dollar amount in terms of how much he's going to have to obligate to pay her? So the basic idea that we've been discussing in the last couple of days is that for Basul it's 200 and for an Amana it's 100. Now, these numbers don't mean anything to us because our life is not revolving around Zuzim, but 200 Zuz is a good amount of money. 100 Zuz is also a good amount of money, right? It's a significant amount of money. Okay, if I could give you a dollar figure of how much that is, I would, but I don't know. I don't know how much it is in terms of dollar figures. What do we do nowadays when we write up our ksuvas? So again, something I didn't mention earlier, but I'll mention it now, and that is as far as the Ashkenazim are concerned, so we use a currency called the Zakuka, and we write in the Ksuva the Zakuka. Now for the Ashkenazim, it's a little bit challenging because both you and I don't know what that currency is. So we write into the Ksuva, even though we're not really sure what that is. Okay, but that's Minhag Ashkenaz, and that's what we've been doing for years. Sfaradim actually write dollar amounts in the Ksuva. So Baruch Hashem, I have the good fortune of learning with one every morning. I ask him what the dollar amount is that they write into the ksuva. So yesh v'yesh, they're different minhagim in terms of how much they're going to be writing into the ksuva. Okay, but anyway, that's the nature of the ksuva, and what we have been going over now the last couple of days, especially yesterday, is what if after he marries her, he discovers that she didn't give him full information. She did not give full disclosure. He married her thinking she was a basula. Meanwhile, she turned out to be a ba'ula. There are two issues that we always have to talk about when this event occurs. Number one, there's a monetary issue. And then number two, there's the isser issue. Meaning us from a monetary issue now, so you were not given full information. What we normally describe in monetary law as mekach taos. Meaning you thought it was one thing. Meanwhile, it turned out to be another thing. So, and I'm not objectifying, but in other words, usually when you get a package from Amazon and it's not what you expected it to be, so what do? You're like, I'd like to void the sale. You return the item. Okay. And so by a woman, again, this is not I'm just using that as an example, but by a woman as well, meaning what do you do if she told you one thing and meanwhile it turned out to be another thing? So normally what we would call that is a mekach taos. And under normal circumstances, there would be a forfeiture of the entire monetary obligation. But there's also an Isser component to it as well. Because remember, you and her were married now for a year prior to the marriage. I know that sounds funny, but if you've been here since the beginning of the Masechta, you perfectly understand. You've been married to her for a year now. So there's an Isser component because there's a really good chance that she was with another man during that year. And therefore, she's prohibited to you. So there are two issues that we always have to discuss and keep on our mind when discussing this kind of litigation between husband and wife. There's monetary and then there's Isser. There's mammon and Isser. So with all that stated, so what did we learn yesterday? So we learned that according to Rava, meaning it was a machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim in terms of what happens when there was not full disclosure. And within that, there was a sheet of Rava. Rava redacted his position. I'm just going to present Rava at the tail end of his position, his redacted position, which is that if witnesses saw that she had relations with another man during the Kedushin, so then Skila. In other words, that's adultery, established and confirmed adultery, and therefore she's going to be subject to Skila. There, the monetary issue is the least of her problems. Okay, in the event, that was number one. Number two, if she was Mizanami Karvalo Klum, meaning let's say that she had relations with another man, not during Kedushin, but she had relations with another man previous to the Kedushin, prior to the Kedushin, she didn't disclose this information. So now this is going to be a classic example of mekachtos, meaning that she needed to tell him that information, she failed to tell him that information, and now he's discovering only because he has relations with her and there's no dam besulim, and now she comes clean. This is what's called the mekachtos. That's going to be a full forfeiture of her ksuva. That's number two. And number three is, let's say she was not with another man, but she lost her besulim through an accident. Mukar eitz. Now, how exactly does she prove it? I don't know. But in the case of mukar eitz, so this is not going to be a full forfeiture of her ksuva. This is not a full mekachtos. Yes, she should have told him that she no longer has her besulim, but it wasn't with another man. It was just simply because of an accident. So there, the ksuva is going to just simply be devalued from 200 to 100. Good. This is Rava's halacha as he presented it yesterday at the end of yesterday's daf. We're going to go on. Tanu Rabbanan. We're on the very bottom of Yud Alpha Mud Beis. We are now third line from the bottom. Now second line from the bottom. Kansa, there goes the glasses. Kansa Rishon L'shem Nisu and V'yesh La'idim Shlo Nisra. So let's say she was married to a man first, right, to her first husband. And V'yesh La'idim Shlo Nisra. However, witnesses now have attested that even though she not only went through Kedushin with the first husband, she also went through Nisun with the second husband. However, Nisun, in other words, they had the chasa, they had the wedding, but she never secluded herself alone with her husband. Okay, so this is a little bit tricky, meaning she's now at the second stage of marriage, right? She went into the chuppah with him. They had Sheva Brachos, a big party as well. But meanwhile, she didn't seclude with him, and witnesses can attest to the fact that she didn't seclude with him. Inami Nistra Velo Shasa Kadei Bia, or they were secluded together, but just for a moment, not enough time, to have Bia. So now, Ein Sheni Yachol Atol Tanis Besil Mashari Kansarisha. Now, when she marries her second husband, so the second husband can have no tainas on her. Meaning, but there were witnesses who said that she wasn't with him intimately. Okay, yes and no. Meaning, you have to just be realistic. Meaning, the fact of the matter is that she was married to another man. When I say marriage, I mean full marriage. Meaning, both kedushin and nisuin. And now the entire assumption that you're making that she wasn't intimate with him is now going to be predicated on Edim. In other words, just no better. She was married to another man. Just that's the best way to enter into this marriage, assuming that she was married to another man. She was with another man. You do not have Tainus Besulim. Okay, now, Amar Rava. I admit, by the way, that's a strange brisa. But what Rava's going to do now is he's going to walk away from the brisa with the following conclusion. And that is Zosemer's concept of Cheskas Besulim and Imses Beula Yeshua Ksuva Mana. So Rabbi says, here's what we can conclude over here. That when you marry a woman, assuming she was a Basula, now in this case over here, he is assuming she's a Basula because there were witnesses. Now again, I know moments earlier I said, but he has to be realistic. I know that. But meanwhile, there were witnesses that said she wasn't secluding with that first husband. So a part of him is assuming that she is a Basula, and meanwhile she turns out to be a Baula. So Yeshua Ksuva Mana, so the Ksuva now is going to be downgraded to a Mana. Okay, now. If you're confused right at the onset of today's daf, I understand. Because at the end of today's daf, at the end of yesterday's daf, which I just reviewed, so Rava taught us that if you thought she was a Bezula and she turns out to be a Bula, that's called a Mekachtos, with a full forfeiture of her Ksuva. That's what we learned at the end of yesterday's daf. Now at the beginning of today's daf, we're not hearing that. What we're hearing now is that if you assume she was a Bezula and it turns out she's a Bula, it's not a full forfeiture of her Ksuva. The Ksuva just simply drops from 200 to 100. So what's happening over here is that yesterday we were saying Rava with an Aleph. This morning we're starting with Rava with a Hey. Meaning they're two different Amoraim. Tosus points this out on the top of our Amud. They're not the same Amora. Therefore, they don't have to agree with each other. So don't be confused. We're just simply hearing our two different opinions. The opinion of Rava of yesterday's daf and the opinion of Rava, the beginning of today's daf. They just simply disagree. Now, Rav Ashi Amar. Yeah. Rav Ashi Amar, we're on the top of Yud Beis Amad Aleph for three lines from the top. Rav Ashi Amar, Ba'ama La'ola, Memelacha, Leslei Klal. Rav Ashi will tell you, no, you don't have to say that way, meaning you can learn the Brisa, and I will tell you that in this particular, that in general, if you were not fully disclosed in terms of whether or not she was a Basula or Ba'ula, and you thought she was a basula, and meanwhile she turned out to be a ba'ula. So that's it. Mekach Taos. Meaning, Rav Ashi is going to take the position of Rava, yesterday's daf. So, but over here, however, it's different. This case is different. Why? Because your assumption is not that she wasn't a basula. She was married previously. So the Gemara says, okay, so whether or not it's a Mekach Taos or not, so we can argue. We not only can argue, we do argue. Meaning Rava says it's not a full Mekach Taos. Rav Ashi says it is a full Mekach Taos. If I asked Rava from yesterday's daf, he also would agree it's a full Mekach Taos. So from a monetary standpoint, we know we're going to argue in terms of how much your ksuva is going to go down. Half or all the way. However, there's another issue to consider. And again, like I said in the beginning of today's daf, in all these types of litigation between husband and wife, there's a monetary aspect and there's an Isser aspect, meaning what did you just learn? You learned that you thought she was not with another man. Turns out she was with another man. So from the beginning of the Masechta, we've already been trained. We now know. What do we need to do? Let's open an investigation. Oh, she was with another man. You didn't expect that? When was she with another man? In other words, you were engaged to her. Engaged, wrong word. You were betrothed to her for a year. In other words, you were married to her for a year. It's very possible she was with another man during the Erusin, which means that she committed adultery. So from the beginning of the Masechta, we now know, open investigation. Let's do the same thing over here. Let's open an investigation. So I'm Rav Shravia. So Rav Shravia says, the case under discussion is where the Kiddushin and the Suin happen back to back. Meaning, like what we do. Meaning, again, like I pointed out in the beginning of the Masechta, I don't know when the minhag changed. Where instead of taking a year between Erusin and the Suin, nowadays we take about 5 minutes. Right? Somewhere around 5 minutes between Erusin and Nisuin. So when did that minhag change? I don't know, but Rav Shravia says that's what we're discussing in this particular Braisa. So now we know that in this particular Braisa, there was simply no opportunity for her to have relations with another man while she was married to this man. So the Now, what did we just see together? That when there was not full disclosure, so what happens in the Braisa, is that the husband cannot be towing tainus basulim. And from there, Rabba learned that if you assume she was a basula, meanwhile she was a ba'ula, so she does not lose her full ksuva, she only loses half of it. Some are going to have the same exact discussion, but on the Mishnah, meaning we were springboarding off the Braisa at the beginning of today's daf. Now we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to springboard off the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us, this goes back to yesterday's daf, Besula Amana Grusha Vechalutza Minasun Ksuva Samana Veinla Tainus Besulim. Okay, so you have a woman who is a Besula, but she's married. What? When we say married, we mean both stages, but she didn't seclude herself with her husband, meaning she had the Kedushin, she also had the Nesuin, she went under the Chuppah, but there was no, he died or divorced her right there at the wedding. Okay. Either one is terrible, but either way. So, Besulim and Nesuin, Hechem Ishkachala, and the Gemara immediately wonders, how is that possible? I know I just described it, but the Gemara now is about to describe it. Kagon. Shenichnasa l'chuppah v'lo nivala. Meaning, again, they went under the chuppah together, and sometime between going under the chuppah and being alone that night, so something happened, death, divorce, whatever happened. So Amar Rabba Zosameres Kansah Becheses Basula Benimses Baula Ksuva Samana, and so now same thing. Meaning, so now that's the Mishnah, and here we go springboarding off that Mishnah. So Rabba's of the position again. Rabba with a hey that you thought she was the Basula. Meaning now you're the second husband who married her, and again the backstory. Yeah, she was married to another man, but she wasn't alone with the other man. She wasn't intimate with the other man. The man died, right? Terrible story. But the man died during the wedding, right? After the chuppah, during the dancing, he died. Okay, right. So now the second husband's assuming she's a basula, and meanwhile she was a ba'ula. So what happens to her ksuva? It drops to 100. So Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi will tell you, no, that's a Mekach Taos. And generally speaking, I will say, Leisakal. Vishani Hacha, Shari Amar Ashraya, I'm sorry, Shari Nichlas Elechupa. So, and over here, why is this case different? The case is different because meaning I know you were I know you were told that she wasn't with her first husband, but Lamaisa, they were under the chuppah together. Meaning at that point in time, you really need to suspect that she was with her husband. I know they told you she wasn't with her husband, but you should just know better. So v'lecha shematachtav zinsa, again, same discussion. Good. So from a monetary standpoint, so we can discuss and deliberate. Is it a full forfeiture of iksuva? Is it just half? Good. But again, let's open an investigation. You thought she was a basula. Turns out she wasn't a basula. So now, I don't know, maybe she committed adultery. So I'm Rav Shavya Kagon, Shekidish of Allah Alter. So again, same discussion. In this particular case we're talking about, where you did Kiddushin and Nisuin back to back. So, what just happened over here? We had the exact same discussion. It's just a question of whether the platform for this discussion is going to be the Braisa or is it going to be the Mishnah. Does it really matter? So the Gemara says, yeah, from a very nuanced point, it matters. So, man demasin la Braisa kol shekena masisin. If you learn it on the Braisa, for sure you would say it on the Mishnah. Man demasin la masisin aval Braisa lo. But if you're learning on the Mishnah, you wouldn't necessarily say the same thing by the Braisa. Why? Because Mishum de Matzi Amarle Anaidim Samche. Because in the Braisa's case, there were actual witnesses. Two witnesses came forward and said, look, I know she was married, but we're attesting to the fact that she wasn't alone and secluded with her husband. The Mishnah's case is not that. The Mishnah's case is just simply, she was married and then he died. In other words, but no, we don't have witnesses coming forward. In other words, it's just what everyone's saying. But there are no official witnesses. In the Bryce's case, there's official witnesses. So if all I had was the discussion of Rav Huna, Rabba, really Rabba. If all I had was Rabba's discussion on the Mishnah, I wouldn't necessarily translate that over to the Bryce, because in the Bryce's case, there was witnesses, and maybe the argument could be made, I really was relying on the witnesses. Okay, Adkan. All right, so at the end of the discussion, so if a woman is marrying a man and...
Isn't she considered an
Amana
at that point?
Yeah, in other words, she's an Amana, but she's also a Basula, meaning... Is she, and even though she's a widow, she's going to get 200 because the dollar amount is all going to be a function of whether or not she's a Basula. And again, if everyone's saying she's a Basula, so and she's saying she's a Basula... And again, the circumstances over here are really strange. But if, in fact, it's pretty much established she's a basula, she's going to get 200. Despite the fact that she's a widow. She's also a widow, but she's going to get 200. That's the whole point of the Mishnah. Okay, so let's quickly recap. So a man marries a woman thinking she's a basula. And it turns out she's a ba'ula. So there are two considerations now, after 2 weeks of discussing this, since the beginning of the Masechta, there are two considerations. One, when did she have relations with another man? Meaning, did she commit adultery? At this point in time, we're unsure, but that uncertainty is going to create a problem. A woman who commits adultery is prohibited to her husband. And so there's an Isser aspect of it. That's really what we discussed in the beginning of the Masechta. That's why we're gonna position the wedding right up against Beis Din getting together, because we want him to go to Beis Din, because we want to open an investigation, because we want to clarify this issue. That's one consideration. And then what we discussed between yesterday and today is the second consideration of money. Meaning, obviously, when he married her, so as part of the Ksuva agreement, so there's going to be an assessed value of how much he's going to have to pay her. But if there wasn't full disclosure, and she knew she was a ba'ula, and she didn't tell him that she was a ba'ula, leading him to think that she's a basula, so now does this fall under the category of mekach tos? Yes or no? And after, between yesterday and today, what do we now know? That there's disagreement on this very issue. So if I asked Rava, with an aleph, meaning yesterday's daf, so he would say this is an example of mekach tos, meaning she didn't disclose this information, she should have disclosed this information, she will now forfeit her entire ksuva. Meanwhile, if I go to today's daf and I ask the rabba with a hey, so he will tell you no. Meaning, obviously, she should have disclosed this information. She didn't, but she's not going to forfeit her entire ksuva. She'll get what a ba'ula gets, which is 100. Meaning her ksuva will just simply be downgraded. It will be deflated from 200 to 100. Okay. Who do we paskin like? Right. It seems like we paskin like Rava. I didn't do enough research for this morning. Okay. But it seems like we passed like Rabbah. Mishnah. We're on Yud Beis Siman Aleph. We are about halfway down in the Amud. We're starting with the next Mishnah and the Minhag in Yehuda. Okay, so let's just quickly reintroduce ourselves to this Minhag in Yehuda. Again, when we say Yehuda, so we mean the province of Yehuda. That's basically Yerushalayim. Okay, after Churban Beis HaMikdash, so Eretz Yisrael is really divided into two halves. There's Gaul and Yehuda. Again, not to be confused with the original split north and south that occurred during Bais Rishon. So, but that's different. Over here, we're now historically post Churban Bais Sheni, and there were two Jewish communities. There was one down in the south by Yerushalayim, surrounded a destroyed Beis HaMikdash, and there was one up in the north in the Galil. Okay, you go to Tveria nowadays, you're going to see the gravestone of one Amora after another Amora, not just Amorayim, Rishonim as well. But in other words, obviously, right, that was a significant Jewish community that lived up in the Galil. Now, in the province of Yehuda, so they had a funny minhag. Now, from the Mishnayos, we don't get from the Mishnayos, meaning we know what the minhag is. But number one, well, first of all, what's the minhag? The minhag was that when a man did eris into a woman. So again, how did I describe in the beginning of the Masechta? So each one lived in their parents' home for a year. And then they weren't allowed to be together. And then a year later, and Nisuin, so now they live together, husband and wife, even though they've been married for a year. Good. Then we already introduced ourselves earlier, and now the Mishnah here is going to reintroduce ourselves again. Minhag Yehuda was that the Arus and the Arusa would consort together. Okay. They would seclude themselves together during Erusin. Okay. Two things we never get from our Gemara. Number one, why? Why did they do that? In our Gemara, we're going to learn the Mishnah. We're going to learn the Gemara. We're going to hear about this minhag numerous times. We never get a sense of why. Why did they do that in Yehuda? Right? Especially when you consider the fact that it's not proper. The Rambam, when he describes an Arus and Arusa, says that they're prohibited to have relations. Right? It's actually baked into the bracha. Right, at the Birchas Erusin, which we saw about a week ago in the Daf. So it says that v'hitolanu al yedei chupa, that the only time that they're going to be permitted to one another is only with the chupa, which means that Erusin, it's prohibited. The Rambam says it's usher for them to be together. So number one, why did they do that in Yehuda? And number two, were the Chachamim acquiescent to the minhag? Did they like it? Did they not like it? Okay. I'm clouded in terms of what's behind this minhag. Okay. But at least at this point in time that we could say clearly that was the minhag. Now with that stated, so now we know that that was in fact the minhag. So now we can ask a really simple question. So in the province of Yehuda, so now when he marries her and he writes up the ksuva, so what's the expectation? I think we all know, meaning the expectation Yehuda is, she's not a Besula, but for a really good reason, because, in other words, probably they were together. So, ha'ochel etzachama b'Yehuda, so in Yehuda, if you're eating by your father-in-law, and that is a nice way to say it, so it's euphemism, so shalo be'edim in yechol atayntans b'sulim im neshim esyachinima. So then what you can't do after the wedding night is you can't say, hey, I expected her to be a Besula, meanwhile she's not. You can't say that. Again, for hopefully what I would call obvious reasons. Okay. So the Gemara says, now the phrasing of the Mishnah, the wording of the Mishnah, certainly the indication we're getting is not everyone in Yehuda did this minhag. Because the Mishnah's language, ha'uchel etzol a'achamav, those that do, which indicate there are those that don't. So, Amar Abayish Ma'amina B'Yehuda Nami Mekamos Mekamos Yesh. So even in Yehuda, this was not ubiquitous. Some did it this way, some did not do it this way. And it's clear from the following brisa, Kiddetanya. I'm Rebbe Yehuda, don't get confused. This is Rebbe Yehuda describing what happens in Yehuda. Hopefully that's clear. I'm Rebbe Yehuda, be 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 Yehuda. Number one, in Yehuda, so Arus and Arusa would consort with one another, so that he would like her even more. Okay? In other words, that there would be even more affection between him and her. Again, we don't get, I know I said this before, but it's true. I'm just marveling. We don't get in the Gemara an explanation of why they did this. But they did it. In other words, that's what they did in Yehuda. And in the Galil, this was not the practice. B'Yehuda b'Rishona, Hayu ma'amidam lehem shnei shush binin, echala ve'echala, kidei lemashmesh esachasim ve'esakala b'shas, kinesasan l'chupa v'galil lo hayu osin kein. In the province of Yehuda, what they would do is that they would have a lot of people there by the nisuin, by the wedding, and to make sure no funny business was going on, and to make sure that when they go into the room that night, in other words, he's not bringing in sheets, she's not bringing in sheets. In other words, no funny business going on, in order to make sure that if in fact she's a basula, it will be caught on the sheet. Now, if you're confused, it's good that you're confused right now, because just one moment earlier in the Braisa, we described how in Yehuda they consorted with each other previous to the marriage. And now we're describing in Yehuda how we made sure that there was no funny business going on at the wedding night, meaning didn't they already have relations previously? This is exactly the point, that some have the minhag in Yehuda to do like the former, some have the minhag in Yehuda to do like the latter. Meaning it wasn't ubiquitous in Yehuda that everyone would go over to his father-in-law's house during Erusin. Some did and some didn't. That's exactly the point. And finally, B'Yehuda B'Rishona Yushoshbinim Yeshenim Bebai Shechasam V'Kala Yeshenim Ba U'V'Gala Lo Ayusa Osin Kain. And then in Yehuda, so the Shoshbinim, so they would be sleeping Bebeis Chasan. Again, just to make sure that nothing funny went on. Meaning that the only time that they were together was only on the wedding night and nothing previously. Now, the Brice ends off with the following. Anyone who does not follow this minhag cannot make a claim of Tanis Besulim. Meaning that in order to ensure that you have a proper claim to make, and you're living in Yehuda, you must follow the guidelines. Now, which guidelines? In other words, there were alternate guidelines that were proposed in the Braisa. The first set of guidelines, meaning the ratio of the Braisa, is describing how, right, they were together during Erusin. So, right, and the second part of the Braisa, the second and third comment of the Braisa, they weren't together, and not only that, but there were a lot of people there to make sure that nothing funny was going on. So, when the Braisa concludes by saying, and if you don't follow this, you can't make a claim of Basulim, ahaya. Which part of the Braisa is it going on? Elam and Resha Kol Shenag Mi Ba'ilei. Is it going on the Resha? Well, then, the wording of the Braisa is funny. Kol Shenag Mi Ba'ilei. It should say, anyone who did practice this cannot make a tiny Basulim. That's how it should have said. And Ela Seifa, Kol Shelo Mushmash Mi Ba'ilei. Then it should say that whoever does not do the requisite people checking the room, making sure that nobody's bringing in any kind of false evidence. So Amar Abai Lola Maresha Vatini Kosha Nahag. So Abai says, okay, so obviously the Braisa needs a little bit of an editing. So Abai says, so we're going to edit. So Kol Shenahag, meaning we're going to change the last line of the Braisa. Not Kol Shalonahag, but rather Kol Shenahag. Meaning, if you're working with the first minhag in Yehuda, which is that they did consort with one another, so then obviously you can't make a tanis besulim. Okay, but you're going to have to change the actual wording of the brisa. So Amalei Rava v'ha kol shelo nahag katani. Now Rava says, yeah, but that the brisa says kol shelo nahag, meaning Rava was opposed to doing such a significant edit of the brisa. Elam Rava hachi kamar. Rava says, no, this is how we're going to have to say it over. Kol shelo nahag minag galal begalal. If you do not do the practice of galal and galal, ela minag Yehuda begalal and yachal aton times besulim. Meaning, if you're living in the galal, so again, the standard practice in galal is what you and I would call the standard practice, which is no consorting during erison. I say like our practice. Our practice is that we have 5 minutes of erison, so it's not even an issue for us, but. In other words, but like we normally present it, and that is no consorting during Erusin. So if you do that, fine. But if you're living in the Galil and for some reason you avail yourself to the minhag of Yehuda, obviously, you can't tone you can't make a claim of times besulim. Ravashi amar lo lamaseifa v'tini kol shelo mushmash. And Ravashi will tell you, no, it's really that last line of the brayse is going on where you had the people in place to make sure that no funny business was going on. The language of the brayse kol shelo nag is kol shelo mushmash. So fine. So in other words, edit the brayse where now the brayse reads kol shelo mushmash. Meaning, if you don't have your people in place making sure that the sheets are the same sheets, et cetera, so then you can't be torn times besulim. Okay. Next Mishnah. Yud Bei Zaman Aleph, Achas Amanis Yisrov, Achas Amanis Kohanim, Sivasa Mana. Whether a widow is either Amanis Yisrael or Amanis Kohanis, either way, so Ksuva is going to be a Mana. Meaning for a Amana, the Ksuva is a Mana. We already talked about that. We already established that. What are we learning new in our Mishnah? Even if the widow is was married to a Kohen, or let's say she herself was a Bas Kohen. Now, based in Shekohanim, how you go from Lebesul Arba Meozuz Velo Micho Biyadam Chachamim. Based in Shekohanim. So what they would do is the following. You want to marry a Kohen, that's going to be a premium. Okay? You can't just simply marry a Kohen and expect that you're going to be, it's going to be the same Ksuva. But rather, it's going to be 400 Zuz to marry a Kohen. And as Tosis points out, Tosis can be found on the Amud Beis, meaning the Ksuva is not just, it's 200 Zuz, and we're going to add more, because Tosefis, you can add whatever you want to the base amount. In other words, the Beis in Shekohanim, they would actually write up the Ksuva to be 400, meaning that's going to be now the base assessment for marrying a Kohen. Now, Tana V'amanas Kohanim Ksuva Samasayim. Now, the Braisa offers a slightly different version. A widow of a Kohen is going to be 200. So, Tanan, Achas Aman of Yisrael, Achas Aman of Kohanim, Ksuvas Amana. Obviously, the Braisa and the Mishnah are not in agreement. Our Mishnah taught us that the Ksuva of an Amanas Kohen is 100. So, which one is correct? So, I'm Ravashi, Shtei Tekanas Havo. So, Ravashi says, what we're looking at over here is, it was a development. Meaning, two times over, the rabbis had to legislate. So, Meikar Tiknulubisul Arba Meozuzul Ula Amanamana. Originally, here's how it went. If you're going to be marrying a Bas Kohen who was a Basula, so that comes at a premium, 400 Zuz. If you're going to marry an Amana of a Bas Kohen, that's going to be 100 Zuz. However, Kevan, top of the Amud Beis. Kevan. Kevin de Chazda Mezalzal Lubahu, Takinla Masayim. So, but then they saw that, oh, wait one second. In other words, instead of 400, I can bargain hunt and get an amana for 100. Okay, fine. That's a significant saving. So then it's fine. So they were Mezalzal, meaning that it really cheapened them. The widows who were Kohanim. So, Kevin de Chazu, okay, fine. So that's why they bumped it up to 200. So in other words, just to give her more significance, meaning so now the Kohen Besula is 400, and the Kohen Alman is 200. Now Kevin Dechazu Dekaprisha Minayu Deamri Adin Nesivin Alman Kohanim Nezel Nesiv Besula Bas Yisrael. But then people said to themselves, wait one second. So I can either get an Almana Kohanim for 200, or a Besula Yisrael for 200. So then. The Almana Kohen was simply nobody was taking them. So Adrinal Milsaya, so then they went back. And basically what happens is that, you know, the market talks, meaning the market is going to demand exactly what the prices are. So over here, it's what the Chachamim are doing is that they're just listening to the market. And so again, I know this sounds a lot like objectification and forgive me, but you know, I'm not really going to be that apologetic, but the point is that the market speaks and since the market speaks, the Chachamim are listening to what the market is demanding. And so, that's why when you're hearing the Mishnah talking about the Almana Kohen being 100 and the Braisa saying 200, it's just, you know, at different points in time, they try to tinker with the prices, but ultimately the market spoke in terms of how much, each woman would command. So this idea that the base dollar figure of a ksuva can be bumped up for a kohen. It's not just limited to kohanim. If you're mishpachos miyuchasos, if you're a family that has yichus, and so you feel that to marry into your family, you can charge more of a premium, by all means, you could do so. So the meisvei arutz alasus kederach shekonim osim kigon bas yisrael lekohen ubas kohen liyisrael osin bas yisrael lekohen ubas kohen liyisrael hu deikat zad kahuna ava bas yisrael liyisrael lo. So now the Gemara quotes the Braisa says that if either side of the marriage, him or her, if they're kohanim, by all means bump up the ksuva. But it sounds like from the Braisa, but if neither party is a kohen, neither his family nor her family, so then you have no right to bump up the base value. So lo mi bai kamer, lo mi bai bas yisrael li yisrael de lo matzi amr le ilui kama elina lach ava bas yisrael a kohen de matzi amr le ilui kama elina lach ima lo kamash malan. So the Gemara just simply says that no. In other words, you don't have to make that inference from the Braisa. The Braisa could just be simply saying that when it comes to a from one family to another, look, this is not an upgrade, but when it comes to for example, a Bas Yisrael to a Kohen, where Amar Lai, he's saying to her, so the Elui Kama Alina Lach, meaning this is an upgrade for you. So I might have thought that under those circumstances, you can't raise the Ksuva, Kamash Malan. No, the Chiddush is, even in that case over there, you have the ability to raise the Ksuva. Okay. So in other words, again, if you're in a position where you can raise a ksuva because it's an upgrade in marriage, so then you have the right to do so. Meaning the base amount is just exactly that. It's a base amount. But if the market can demand and command a more of a ksuva, so you have the entitlement to write more of the ksuva. Okay. We are starting now with the Mishnah. We're on Yud Beis Amud Beis. So after a discussion today, first and foremost, our first discussion today was regarding a Mekach Taos, where you thought she was a Basula, meanwhile she's a Ba'ula. So what happens now in terms of Iksuva? Does it get downgraded or does it get avoided altogether? Machlokas Amarayim. That was our first discussion today. Second discussion, if you are practicing the Minhag of Yehuda, where you and the Arusa were consorting prior, so can you make a Tanis Basulim at the marriage? The answer obviously is no. Okay, and then a question of, in the province of Yehuda, does everyone follow this custom? And the answer is no, not everyone follows this custom. Good. And then, can we add to the ksuva? And the answer is yes. If the market will allow you to add, you're marrying into a family of Kohanim, she's a Bas Kohen, families that are Miuchasos, can you add to the ksuva? The answer is yes. Okay, good. From here, basically, until the end of the first perek, we are now going to, but not be shifting gears, but we're now going to have the following back and forth. And this is going to cover us for the remainder of today's daf, and tomorrow, and the day after. Right? Yud Gimel, Yud Dalid. Oh, and one more, and Tesvav as well. Okay. And that is, now, let's say we have the following. They got married. She was, in fact, not a Basula, but now we have what's called claim-counterclaim. Okay? In other words, he said, she said. Okay? This is going to be a classic discussion that occurs throughout Halacha. And that is Yavtainas. In other words, each one has a claim. And obviously, each one's going to make a claim that's going to benefit them. That's generally how it works. And a very simple question of who to believe. Okay, now obviously, when it comes to claims, if all we're talking about are claims, claims are generally speaking not that strong in terms of evidence. Meaning, obviously, everyone is going to be invested to make a claim that's going to be beneficial to them. Right, I'm obviously invested in making sure that I get the most. So if I'm going to be making a claim, obviously my claim is going to be influenced by the fact that I think I'm right. And your claim, same thing. You're going to make a claim that's going to obviously lean towards you think you're right. So generally speaking, what do we do with claims? We shrug our shoulders generally when it comes to claims. However, as we're going to be discussing, we'll start the discussion today. And this will go into tomorrow as well. And that is, can we assess where one claim is going to be a little bit better than the other claim? Well, let's see the Mishnah together. The Mishnah, I know, says Aisha v'lamatz ala besulim. Okay. Man marries a woman and it turns out she wasn't a besula. He omers mishah astarni na'anasim v'nistab chasadeu. Okay, so she says, look, here's the story. story was is that during the Erusin this past year, so I didn't tell you, I was terribly embarrassed, but okay, but obviously now you know. So I was violated during Erusin, but in other words, it was after we were married, so I was already yours at that point in time, and so it's unfortunate for you. Right, Nistab Chasadeh, we heard that expression earlier in the Masechta. Literally, your field was flooded. Meaning, look, it's unfortunate for you. In other words, but I'm not going to lose out. In other words, the Ksuva is going to remain at 200. That's our claim. And Vehu Omer Loki Ela Achala Yeristich, Vehaya Mechi Mechachsaus. And he says to her, no. What happened was, is that you were with another man prior to the Erusin, and you didn't tell me this, and this falls under the category of Mechachsaus. And again, if you ask Rava what that means, it means that basically what he's demanding is a full forfeiture of a ksuva. Okay. Now, who do we believe? Okay, so it's a he said, she said. Classic he said, she said. Who do we believe? What do you think? What do you think is going to happen right now? It's machlokas. Okay, so Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar, says that she's going to be believed. And Rabbi Yeshua, Amar, Lomi Pi Anu Chayim. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we're not hanging on her words, right? Literally, we're not living by her words. Ela reza becheskes bula, achelo tisareis, vitaso, ashitivirai lidvareha. We're going to assume that she was a ba'ula prior to the Erusin, unless she brings evidence. Meaning, oh, just because she says so does not mean that she's right. It's just her claim. And we're not gonna believe her. Okay, so, what do we have over here? So we have Rabbi Gamliel together, coupled with Rabbi Eliezer, who say that she is credible in this case, and Rabbi Yeshua is saying that she's not credible. Okay, machlokas. Now, Itmar. So in a moment, we're going to try to explain the machlokas. We are going to take ourselves on a little bit of a detour, but obviously it's not a detour. We're going to discuss something related, and we're going to try to bring it back to our Mishnah. Okay, Manali Biadech V'Hala Omer Ein Yodea. Okay, so let's start off with a simple monetary claim between two parties. So Alan comes over to me, says to me, Sugarman, you owe me money. You owe me $100. At this point in time, I'm shaking. So I say to him, I don't know. Any odea. Meaning there's no document. If there's a document, there's nothing to talk about. So I just simply shrug my shoulder and say, I don't know. I don't remember. Okay, so now what happens? So Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna Amri Chaya, Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan Amri Potter. So what we have over here is a Machlokas Amarayim. So the Shita of both Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna says that I'm Chayev. I'm obligated to pay. And Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan say Potter. No, I'm exempt to pay. Let's understand this a little bit better. So Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda Amri Chayev, Bar Vishama Bar Yadif. So now, as far as Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna are concerned, here's their argument. Their argument's like this. Meaning, yes, it's claim, counterclaim. Okay, but Alan's coming at me with a definitive claim. I know for a fact you owe me money. Oh, okay. Now again, he doesn't have any other evidence other than his claim, but his claim is coming at me with what's called a tainis bari. He's clear about it. Now, my response is not no, but rather I don't know. That's what's called a tainis shema. Maybe. So what happens now when we have this Tainis Bar versus Tainis Shema. So interestingly enough, Rav Huna says, we're going to favor the Tainis Bari.
Yeah, you're not disputing what's claimed. You're not saying no, you're not disputing. You said maybe.
Yeah, but that's me saying I don't know. In other words, I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no. I'm saying I don't know. No, I understand that. But in other words, correct. But right now, the claim I'm submitting is I don't know. It's what's called the Tanya Shema. Now, Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan, Amrei Pater, Uki Mamun, Becheskes Marei, and Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan will tell you the following. Look, granted, we have claims over here. Granted, Alan's claim is better than mine. It's a qualitatively better claim. But we have another a determinant in halacha, and a much stronger determinant in halacha, and that determinant is called chazaka. Who's holding the money right now? I'm holding the money. I'm motzi mechaver al avaraya. You want to extract money from me, so it's very nice that you come at me with claims. Right? Claims are lovely. My holding of the money is my ownership of the money. I'm motzi mechavero al avaraya. You want to get money out of me? So you need to show evidence. So that is the argument behind Rav Nachman and Rav Yehud and Rav Yochanan. Okay, good. So Amalei by the Rav Yosef had the Rav Huna the Rav Yehuda the Shmuel he. So this position Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. So it's attributable to Shmuel. How so? So follow. Now, granted, by the way, there's going to be a lot of bouncing balls over here, but it's actually a pretty clear line. It just requires a little bit of extra thought right now. So, we learned in the Mishnah. So, she's pregnant, and the question is, Matifa Shal Uber Zeh, knew who's the father, right? This is a Mishnah upcoming. We're going to see this Mishnah in tomorrow's daf. So, Zemi Ishponi Vekoinhu. So, she says, I'll tell you who the father is, and she points right to the man who is responsible for this baby, and it happens to be that he's a Kohen. Now, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lazar Omrim, Nemenes. So, Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. By the way, theme alert. Rabbi Gamliel is going to, in all these Mishnayos, Rabbi Gamliel is going to say she's believed. Now, I'm Rabbi Yudah Mishmol, Alachik Rabbi Gamliel. And the Gemara quotes B'Shem Shmuel, that in fact is the halacha, meaning she's believed. The Amr Le Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Le Rav Yehuda Shinana. Amar Le Mishmei De Shmuel, Alachik Rabbi Gamliel Afri Shona. And now Rabbi Yehuda gets nudged. Now it's a little bit confusing because he's getting nudged from Rav Shmuel, not the same as Shmuel. But anyway, Rav Yehuda gets nudged. New, say it better. Meaning, don't just tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel in the identification of paternity. Say it better. Say that the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah. So my after Yishon Afagav Dika Lamem Ruka Mamona Becheskes Marye Am Rabbi Gamliel Bar Yadif. So how are we going to say it better? Because the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel in our Mishnah. Meaning, in the Mishnah, tomorrow's daf, yes, it's a big, Rabbi Gamliel is a big deal. Our daf is even a bigger deal, because our daf is talking about mammon. All we're saying in tomorrow's daf is that, good, we're establishing paternity. Okay, which, by the way, is not small potatoes either. Meaning, I don't want to downgrade that. That's obviously really important. But over here, in our Mishnah, not only are we believing her, legabe, who the father is, we're believing her regarding her monetary claim, meaning in our Mishnah, what is she saying? I'm not going to lose a dollar. Ah, you thought I was a besula, and meanwhile I wasn't. Yeah, but here's what I'm telling you. And she just simply forwards a claim. And Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her. That our Mishnah is more impressive. Rabbi Gamliel's position is simply more impressive. So, new Rabbi Yehuda, don't stop at tomorrow's Mishnah. Say the halacha is like today's Mishnah. Okay, good. Fine. So, fine. So what do we have right now? So we have now Rabbi Yehuda quoting Shmuel that the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, both in tomorrow's Mishnah and today's Mishnah. Tomorrow's Mishnah, paternity, and we believe her. Today's Mishnah, money, and we believe her. Now again, why is money more impressive? Because right now, it's going against the chazakah. Who's holding the money right now? The husband's holding the money right now. So, now, where are we? So here's where we think we are. We have a Mishnah regarding claim counterclaim. And we have also a Machlokas Amarayim in a simple case of claim counterclaim. In the case where Alan says I owe him 100, I come back with him with an I don't know. So now, who's going to win? Again, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda says, favor Alan. He comes with a Tainis Bari. Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan says, favor Sugarman. Why? Because he's holding the money. So now, of these two positions, so, what's at odds with one another? Like the Gemara said, the Rav Huna Rav Yehuda is predicated on Bar Vishema, meaning Alan's claim is better. He's saying it definitively. I'm coming back with him with a week. I don't know. Good. So, Bar Vishema. What's Rav Yochanan Rav Nachman predicated on? Chazaka. Chazaka is a determinant.
But the thing is, it's not a chazaka because it's his money that you're holding. Of course you're holding, but it's his money. It's not that.
The only way we know it's his money is because of his claim.
I understand, but the thing is that
it's a claim. It's a claim. Chazaka, it's a claim. It's all. I'm telling you. I hear you. It's just a claim.
The cases are different, though, because she's admitting.
Okay, wait one second. We're going to distinguish. The Gemara is going to do exactly what you're trying to do. You're on the right track. Just give me one second. So that's the machlokas. By the money. Now, what the Gemara is going to try to do is alignment. Exactly what Alan just tried to do. The Gemara is going to try to create alignment, meaning the machlokas now of Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda versus Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan seems to be running parallel with our Mishnah and the Machlokas Rambam Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. And that's exactly what the Gemara is about to do. Lema Rav Yehuda v'Rav Huna Darmika Rambam Gamliel v'Rav Nachman v'Rav Yochanan Darmika Rabbi Yeshua. And it seems to be that it's a perfect alignment. Because in the case of our Mishnah, right, who do you think knows better about what happened to her?
She.
Okay, good. So she knows better. But again, she's not advancing evidence. All she's doing is saying it. Again, it's a claim.
Chazaka.
It's a claim. So it's a claim against a claim. Oh.
But it's chazaka also.
Give me one second. The Gemara is going to flesh it out. So, Am lecha Rav Nachman anadamri afilu k'rabbi Gamliel. Ah, so Rav Nachman will tell you like this. Look, I'm not going to move from my position, but you don't have to pit me against Rabbi Gamliel. I could work together with Rabbi Gamliel. Why? Because Adkan lo kamaran Gamliel some ela deika migu. Because over there, not only is she making a claim in the Rabbi Gamliel case, in the case where she's now saying that yes, she is a ba'ula, but she says her claim was that she was violated during Erison. Do you know why Rabbi Gamliel says that she's believed? It's not because of migu. Because she could have made even a better claim. In other words, what happened? What happened was is that her basulin wasn't there. She could have made a better claim. She could have said mukas eitz. Oh, she could have made a better claim. And generally speaking, if you're making a claim, and behind that claim is an even better claim, so that ups your net manus. That ups your credibility. This in halacha is called a migu. We see it time and again throughout Shas, and here's a perfect illustration. Avahacha my migu ika. But over here, like in other words, when Alan comes at me and says, I owe him 100, and I simply shrug my shoulders and say, I don't know, that's more or less the best claim I can make. Meaning, I guess I could submit no, but in other words, it's not a better claim. So right now, this is as good as it's going to get. So what Rav Nachman will tell you is that I'm on board with Rambam Gamliel. You don't have to put me against Rambam Gamliel. So the Gemara says he could also suggest that that Rambam Gamliel over there says that ukma chazaka, meaning we're going to go with chazaka. Chazaka over there, meaning what? Chazaka over there, not monetary chazaka, but rather she's a basula, meaning obviously she started in life as a basula, and it changed, obviously. In other words, she became a ba'ula. But generally speaking, when do we assume a change occurred? At the more recent opportunity, meaning probably during Erison. Okay, so over there in the Rambam Gamliel case, you have a number of things to point out to why Rambam Gamliel is going to believe her. Number one, her claim has a migu. She could have made a better claim. Number two, she has a cheskas aguf. So she's got a lot of things working for her. Avahacha mai chazaka islay. Lahai. But over here, in other words, it's not the case. Meaning, over here, Alan's saying I owe him 100. I'm simply to shrug my shoulders, I don't know. So over here, we don't have those things working in Alan's favor. Meaning, he doesn't have a migu. He doesn't have there's no other working chazaka. Okay, so the cases can be distinguished. And hachinami mistabaka de kamashin and de Rav Nachman hu da amar karam and gamliel, de imken kashi hilchasa hilchasa. And the Gemara says, and by the way, I think this is the right way to say it. It's the correct way to say it. Why? Because otherwise, we're gonna be stuck. Because the Kamalan Hilchas Karab Nachman Bedine. Because we know how to paskim when it comes to monetary law. By Dine Mamanos, we paskim like Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman says that in the case of money, in the simple case of Alan comes at me with a claim, I shrug my shoulders and I say, I don't know. The halach is like Rav Nachman. Uka mamonab acheske, meaning I'm right now holding the money, and all he has against me is a claim. Okay, I get to keep the money. Okay. Don't worry, I'm still. I know. Alan's like. we're gonna see about that.
But the thing that you said before, Rav Nachman, because usually Rav Nachman is an extension of Shmuel versus Rav. Okay. In the Mamonot, it's Shmuel.
And okay, good. Rahman and that's exact. That's
exact. Here is going with Rav Yochanan against Shmuel.
Wait one second. So the Gemara says, I know the halacha is like Rav Nachman. The Gemara is addressing exactly your point. Uvaha, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Halacha is like Rav Gamliel. And meanwhile, over here, Shmuel told us that the halacha is like Rav Gamliel. Ah, So so the exercise we just went through is an important exercise, meaning Rav Nachman and Rav Gamliel are not at odds with one another. Meaning Rav Nachman will tell you then the simple mana case, so we're going to, chazaka is going to be the determinant. But in the case of Rav Gamliel, in the case of the woman, he said, she said, so we're going to believe the woman. Not because the halacha are at odds with one another, they're not at odds with one another. In the case of Rav Gamliel, you have other factors to take into consideration. One is that her claim is bolstered by Amigu. Two, she has a cheskas aguf. So there are other factors over there that work in her favor. That's why over there, we possibly like Rav Gamliel, which we're going to believe her. In the simple money case, right, the only thing that the Toveya it has in his favor is just simply a claim. That's not enough to extract money from somebody else. Even though the other person is not coming back with the strongest of claims, even though it's a case of Bari Vishema, but still, when all said and done, it's just a claim. Okay.
You didn't assume that because she didn't come forward earlier is because of the ketubah?
She didn't come forward earlier probably because of embarrassment. Well, I mean,
so
I...
She's going to lose the ketubah. No.
No, but in other words, she, in other words, again, as per her claim, she was violated during Erison.
She gets downgraded.
But the ketubah is not written until chuppah, right?
Yeah, but I understand. But in other words, but she was embarrassed. In other words, she was embarrassed. It could be that simple. Okay, Ad Khan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. Quick review. Okay, let's call it three big topics for today. One, Mekach Taos, right at the point where she does not disclose the fact that she was a Be'ula, and meanwhile she was. So, does she forfeit her entire ksuva? Machlokus Amoraim. Machlokus between Rav and Rabba. Okay, I'll say it simply like that. Okay, that's how Tosus says it. Good. That's number one. Number two, that was our first big discussion for today, taking us to the Mishnah of the province of Yehuda. In the province of Yehuda, you don't have Tainus Besulim, because they consorted with one another prior to that. Meaning during Erison, they consorted with one another. As a result of that, he does not have a Tainus Besulim. Not everyone in Yehuda practiced that way. That was our second big topic. Our third big topic for today is what about upgrading the Ksuva? In other words, and claiming that you can command more money for the ksuva. You could do that. If the market allows it, you could do that. The Kohanim, when you marry into the Kohanim, they expected that the ksuva be doubled. What about an Almana Kohen? They tested the market. And it didn't, they couldn't command more for the Almana, but for the Besula Kohen, it could command more. And also for Mishpachos Miuchasos as well. They can command more for that as well. And finally, our last topic for this morning is, this is now going to be our fourth topic, is the marries her. She is a Be'ula, but now it's claim counterclaim. In other words, she's coming at him and saying, look, here's the story. Here's what happened. In other words, in our Mishnah that we did today, her claim is the nasty, that after Erison, Rachmanis, I was violated. And therefore, I was your possession at that point in time, nistap chasadeu, right? It's your unfortunate loss, meaning you're not shaving off a dollar off the ksuva. And his counter argument is, you had relations with a man beforehand, right? Before we got married, and you didn't disclose it. Okay, so again, he said, she said, claim, counterclaim. So what do we do? Mishnah brings down the machlokas tanayim. What's the conclusion of the Gemara? That we pass like Rabbi Gamliel, that we believe her. Does that mean that in the case of Bari Vishema, we're going to always believe the Tainus Bari? No. The halacha is like Rav Nachman. That if all we have is claim and counterclaim, and there's a chazaka, there's a mochzak, we're going to follow the chazaka. The chazaka is going to be the determinant, even against the Tainus Bari. And it just happens to be that in our Mishnah, we do paskin like Rav Gamliel, but because of other considerations. One, that she has a migu. Two, she has a cheskas aguf.